Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Forever's not long.
Ladies and gentlemen, news of Forever Chemicals. Penguins living along the Patagonian coast of Argentina can serve as living monitors of their environment. That happens by attaching small chemical detecting bands to their legs. This is according to a study from UC Davis and the State University of New York at Buffalo. For the proof of concept study published in the journal Earth Environmental Sustainability, I read it for the staples, UC Davis scientists outfitted 54 Magellanic penguins with silicon passive samplers placed gently around their legs for a few days during the 22-24 breeding seasons. The sensors safely absorbed chemicals from the water, air, and surfaces that the penguins encountered while they foraged to, you know, like feed their chicks, what they do to keep the penguin thing going. Once retrieved, the samples were sent to the Buffalo SUNY campus for testing. It revealed that per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, your forever chemicals, were detected in more than 90% of the bands, even in this most remote region. I didn't even know they had a musician's. No. Testing revealed a mixture of older legacy pollutants, as well as chemicals that replaced the now phased out forever chemicals. But, quote, by using a non-invasive sampling approach, we were able to detect a shift from legacy PFAS, those are forever chemicals, to newer replacement chemicals in the penguin's environment over time, said the senior author of the study. Quote, again, the presence of Gen X and other replacement chemicals, they're typically associated with nearby industrial sources, shows that these compounds are not staying local, but are reaching even the most remote ecosystems. This raises important concerns that newer PFAS, forever chemicals, despite being designed as safer alternatives, are still persistent enough to spread globally and pose exposure risks to wildlife. Unquote. Just thank your lucky stars you're not a penguin. Hello, welcome to the show.
There may be a greener, green grass in the meadow. There may be faces so hard to ignore. But I'm not tempted by some pretty fellow, 'cause I come back to your door. The road of love isn't paved with petals soft and smooth. It's a rocky road that's heaven sent or downright war. So when I wander and roam, do not doubt me. I'm just a phone call away, and what's more, don't clip my wings and all the things, baby, that you love about me. You own the map that brings me back to your door. To your door, to your door. The road of love isn't paved with petals soft and smooth. It's a rocky road that's heaven sent or downright war. There may be storm clouds outside our window. There may be eggshells all over our floor. There may be a time spent apart, but we both know that I'll come back to your door. Yes, I'll come back, to your door.
From London, England. Yeah, the one you've heard of. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Well, I've pointed out on this program before, and I will after, that so much of the discussion publicly about nuclear power, about, you know, we got to get nuclear power back because we got these data centers and all of that. There's one word that's missing from almost all of that palaver, and that word is waste, as in, no, not that. As in, what do you do with the waste from nuclear processes, waste that lasts in radioactive form for thousands of years, like longer than Homo sapiens has been around, you know, like the Neanderthals did. No, anyway, some maybe good news about that today. The Interstate Oil and Gas Commission has said that more than 3 million idle oil wells, oil and gas wells, must be plugged and abandoned in the United States. How does that relate? I'll tell you. Plugging and abandonment is a significant issue for the producers or states who eventually must bear the cost. But the Journal of Petroleum Technology says repurposing wells can take advantage of certain idle wells, not idle wells, suitable for long-lasting isolation of spent nuclear fuel. That highly radioactive stuff, initials SNF, for you initial fans, deep borehole disposal of SNF in crystalline basement rock has been investigated by the Department of Energy and Sandia National Lab in New Mexico for decades. The studies included drilling expensive wells into volcanic and metamorphic rocks and potentially storing such wastes. They haven't done it yet. Waste is still with us. The novelty presented here is that by repurposing and using the storage space of steel casing of certain deep oil and gas wells that are destined to be plugged and abandoned, more options can be created for many localities, like having something in them besides nothing. The database of the organization, the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission, can be used to prepare a list for certain states, your Texas, your Louisiana, among them, of regions that include idle oil and gas wells. Louisiana is full of those. These wells can be screened on the basis of their wellbore configurations and drilling history to see if they meet the expectations for waste storage. Yeah, good news for Louisiana. A lot of radioactive stuff just right underneath, you know, because it's very solid soil there. Oh, sorry. Meanwhile, at Hanford in Washington, the nuclear site up there where they made plutonium for World War II, which we never... Oh, did we? Contractors at the Hanford site have made history permanently disposing of the first batch of solidified nuclear waste created at the Hanford site. According to officials with the Department of Energy, you know you can trust them. Earlier this week, the Hanford site and its contractor, Central Plateau Cleanup Company, permanently disposed of the first containers of vitrified nuclear waste produced at the site. Officials said liquid nuclear waste was turned into glass at Hanford's waste treatment and immobilization plant, then packed into stainless steel containers that were placed into the on-site integrated disposal facility. At least something gets integrated these days. No, but seriously, officials said the disposal of the batch of solid waste represents a key achievement in the Hanford site's progress towards a permanent disposal of the waste that was generated decades ago. It's just been sitting around radiating. The 586-square-mile Hanford site was chosen in 1943 as a site to enrich plutonium for nuclear weapons. Radioactive waste from the enrichment process was stored in underground tanks or dumped directly into the ground. Don't know how they're going to get that back. It is now the site of one of the largest nuclear cleanup efforts in the world. I would think so, when you've been dumping the waste in the ground. But I bet housing there is cheap. Clean, cheap, safe, too safe to meet are our friend the Atom. And now.
Looks like Musk Club.
The Rich Get Richer Department. The richest man in the world, supposedly, Elon Musk, has made a particularly bold demand of his Wall Street advisors. This is ahead of the initial public offering of his company SpaceX to the stock market. Musk is requiring banks, law firms, auditors, and other advisors working on the initial public offering to buy subscriptions to Grok. That's his artificial intelligence chatbot, part of SpaceX, which is going on sale. This is according to four people with knowledge of the matter talking to the New York Times. Some of the banks have agreed to spend tens of millions of dollars on the chatbot. They've already started integrating Grok into their IT systems, according to three of the people who spoke to the Times. Musk and a spokesperson for SpaceX didn't comment. For almost any major initial public offering, banks find ways to ingratiate themselves with the company going public, as well as its chief executive. But after several years with few significant public offerings on the offer to market, Wall Street has been salivating, that's the New York Times word, for a deal like SpaceX. The deal is forecast to be one of the largest in history right before OpenAI has its IPO. You know, money doesn't have to be smart. The IPO is expected for Grok is expected to raise, for SpaceX, expected to raise more than $50 billion at a valuation of the company above $1 trillion. That means the banks could generate fees in excess of $500 million for advising on the deal. What advice would you need that would be worth Musk's ability to secure business, or as we say in the business from the banks for his AI chatbot shows the enormous sway of the world's richest man, so-called, over a banking sector clamoring for its business now and in the future. I wouldn't be buying bank stock if I were you right now, ladies and gentlemen. But don't ask me. The bank's purchase of Grok subscriptions were not merely goodwill gestures, according to the three people with knowledge of the arrangement. Musk insisted that they purchase the chatbot services, too. He's also asked the banks to advertise on his social media site, X. That's the way to get ads. But he was less adamant about that request, according to two of the sources. That's all you have to do to get ads, is say you're going to be going public, selling stock, and waiting for the advertisers to line up. Ooh. Smells like Musk love. Or sounds like it, sorry. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our smart world.
It's a smart world.
Well, this involves something that has been reported mainly in my ken by the guy who writes a lot about monopolies, Matt Stoller. You've heard him on this program. And he's been noticing and pointing out the tendency of corporations to prohibit users of their product from fixing them themselves. You know that Apple does that. But the just a prohibition on, you know, touching your own gear and being able to fix it. So one of the major contributors to that trend has been John Deere, the tractor maker. And now the company, has a... There is a John Deere there, isn't there? There's a John Doe. It has agreed to a proposed $99 million settlement following a class action lawsuit in Illinois. That's according to the British Tech Journal, the Register, one of several similar legal challenges underway across the U.S. This lawsuit brought against John Deere in regards the farmers' long-standing concerns over the company's rigid maintenance rules. Plaintiffs say those rules prevent farmers from repairing their own equipment. Customers often forced to rely on John Deere-approved specialists, the only outfits to which the company provides critical repair and diagnostic software. Plaintiffs argued these authorized dealers, guess what, charge artificially inflated prices, in turn harming farmers' incomes. Seems to be the purpose of the whole deal, doesn't it? John Deere has agreed to the prelim settlement, still subject to a fairness assessment. I wonder who does those. And final approval. The company initially denied the antitrust allegations, first leveled against it way back in 2022. Settlements, as you know, don't constitute an admission of wrongdoing. Of course not. Ask the Catholic Church. If the settlement receives court approval, the $99 million plus interest will be distributed to class members based on total labor hours spent on repairs since January 2018, but also require John Deere to make available the software and diagnostic tools needed for farmers to make their own repairs or to seek analogous services from independent repair providers who might work at, you know, competitive prices, and the settlement would secure customers access to future repair resources after they've been made available to over 50% of the official John Deere dealers. Be interesting to see if certain other companies like your Apple gets with the program. And now, speaking of settlements, news of the godly. Another godly settlement. Dateline Baltimore. Survivors of clergy sexual abuse in Maryland say they want more than repeated apologies from the Catholic Church. New developments are emerging in the Archdiocese of Baltimore's ongoing bankruptcy case. Yes, another archdiocese going bankrupt. For their convenience, substantial progress made this week in mediation between the Archdiocese and sex abuse victims, including news that a national insurer is offering several million dollars to the local survivors. The attorney who represents survivors and advises the creditors' council says the Hartford Insurance Company has proposed a huge figure as part of the negotiations. The Hartford, one of the leading insurance companies in the U.S., has put forward $100 million, said the attorney. So the money would help settle the bankruptcy case, but no one would receive payments until both sides reach an agreement. That's called a settlement. Quote, we need the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and I'm calling upon William Lurie, who is our Archbishop, to step forward, take responsibility, be accountable, and get his assets up to help compensate the 940 plus or minus children who were sexually abused. That's a quote from the attorney. The Archdiocese of Baltimore filed for bankruptcy in September 2023, just before the Maryland Child Victims Act became law. That legislation ended the statute of limitations for abuse survivors. That allows people to come forward decades after they were abused and sue the institutions that employ their abusers. The Survivors Committee is hopeful that other insurance companies, about 10 according to those involved, will follow the Hartford's lead with additional settlement money. The Survivors Committee has asked for nearly $890 million. Archdiocese might have to sell some property. News of the godly.
Beat up little seagull on a marble step. Trying to find the ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city, in a hard town by the sea. Ain't nowhere to run to, ain't nothing here for free. Hook on the corner, waiting for a train. Junk line on the sidewalk, sleeping in the rain. And I hide their faces, and I hide their eyes, 'cause the city's dying.
From the most secure part of the most secure place in the history of the earth, this is the most secure president with another edition of True Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Tissues. Your nostrils will love you. Because of the history-making importance of this week, once again you'll hear the sound of all caps words with a trademarked echo effect. No one has ever heard anything like it. First, this week saw an inspirational moment for the generations, not the moonshot, it was okay, but our absolute domination over the two-bit country that calls itself, for some reason, Iran. The remaining few leaders of that decimated, obliterated, and nearly extinct country are living in a dream world, thinking that somehow they still exist. If they don't re-obliterate themselves long enough to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, they'll find it's the Crooked of Hormuz before nightrise or nightfall, whichever comes first. These are fucking monstrous people whose citizens should rise up unless they don't want to get hideously slaughtered, in which case they really should stay home and not watch Fox News, which they can't, and that's our gift to them. These people who weren't good enough to be on the Fox News channel that gave us the amazing Pete Hegseth are now turning against my administration like a bunch of dung beetles. Whatever the hell they are. The great Stephen Miller told me to call them that. Unlike many of my so-called advisors, most of whom I've never met, he wasn't afraid of the greatest war in the history of human destruction like no one has ever seen. Unlike those mentally defective cast-offs from Fox, who Rupert should have fired years ago just from being very seriously brain damaged, Megyn Kelly, she still got blood coming out of her whatever, and now she's too old to have a whatever. Tucker Carlson always looked like he was on his way to a Boy Scout meeting on the queer side of town. And Joe Rogan, whom I made the number one podcaster, somebody should tell Joe, people don't even listen to iPods anymore. They're all dangerous lunatics, and if the FCC or the FTC or the FBI or the F-whatever doesn't shut them up quickly, we'll have to create a new agency by executive order. Maybe the federal go-to-jail commission. Finally this week, we saw the first drawings of my new arch to be built to protect your eyes from the painfully ugly Jefferson Memorial. The only detail remaining to be ironed out is whether McDonald's will pay to paint the arch golden. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Stay loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Light Bulbs, brighter than the idiots on Fox. So long.
As I'm being followed by a moon shadow, leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hands, lose my plow, lose my land, oh, if I ever lose my hands, oh, I won't have to work no more. And if I ever lose my mouth, all my teeth, north and south, yes, if I ever lose my mouth, oh, if I won't have to talk. Did it take long to find me? I asked the faithful light. Oh, did it take long to find me? And are you gonna stay the night? I'm being followed by a moon shadow. Leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. Moon shadow.
From London, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is way past time for...
Is AI a bubble? That would be trouble, messier than stubble. Anything but delicious, it might be bubblicious.
The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, shared an AI-generated photo that falsely depicted a U.S. pilot who was rescued from Iran. Abbott has faced ridicule over the photo, which even had a made-with-AI tag attached to it. Abbott retweeted the photo on his X account with the text, quote, "This is so awesome," unquote. A community note was added to the post noting that, quote, "no credible records exist for the image, which depicts telltale AI signs, hand anomalies, gear deformities, lighting errors, etc." Unquote. No photos of the pilot of the downed U.S. fighter have been released, or at least had been by then, nor any identifying details of the USA Air Force member who was missing, behind enemy lines for over 24 hours. Abbott explained that he was missing Costello. No, he... Large language models can be very persuasive. Researchers say that's a problem when they're used to create advertising. This is also from the British Tech Journal Register. By the way, OpenAI has announced already they're open for advertising. And AI may, this is your host's opinion, just end up being for advertising. Anyway, a trio of computer scientists from Princeton set out to examine whether conversational AI agents can manipulate consumer choices during online shopping sessions. Turns out they can influence behavior, and most of the consumers being steered didn't realize it. Well, Steers never in a preprint paper titled Commercial Persuasion in AI-Mediated Conversations, the three researchers tested the impact of AI-based promotions. They did so because online commerce increasingly involves AI mediation. Between 30 and 45% of U.S. customers already use generative AI for product research and comparison. About 23% having made an AI-assisted purchase as of last December. The experiments involved asking about 2,000 ebook readers to browse a catalog of titles available at Kindle and select a book. The researchers designated a fifth of the ebooks as sponsored in the back-end system, but did not disclose that to participants. The researchers randomly assigned different bots to handle the conversations to ensure their data didn't report the proclivities of a single model. You don't want those model proclivities, do you? Quote, when the agent was instructed to persuade, 61% of participants chose a sponsored product, nearly tripling the 22% rate under traditional search, said one of the co-authors of the study. He added, simply chatting with an AI without persuasion performed no better than search. It's the persuasive intent that drives the effect, unquote. The researcher added that transparency revealing that a result was sponsored didn't change things. With an explicit warning, 55% still chose the sponsored product. And when the AI models were directed to hide their intent, their persuasive intent, this detection of persuasion declined from 17.9% to just 9.5%. And the persuasion rate dipped only a bit to 40.7%. So what AI is telling you to do is buy. Now, from Nature, you may be one of the millions of people who spend too much time staring at screens, being bombarded with blue light. In the past 18 months, those symptoms may have been typed by you into a range of popular chatbots and asked what was wrong with you. You might have gotten an odd answer. Bixonomania. The conditions don't appear in the standard medical literature because the ailment doesn't exist. It's the invention of a team of researchers who dreamed up the skin condition and then uploaded two fake studies about it to a server in early 2024. One of them, Osmanovic Thunstrom. Thunstrom. Sure. Carried out this experiment to test whether large language models would swallow the misinformation and then spit it out as reputable health advice. Quote, I wanted to see if I could create a medical condition that did not exist in the database, she said. The experiment worked rather too well. Within weeks of her uploading information, attributed to a fictional author, major artificial intelligence systems began repeating the invented condition as if it was real. Even more troublingly, other researchers say the fake papers were then cited in peer-reviewed literature. Osmanovic Thunstrom says this suggests that some researchers are relying on AI-generated references without reading the underlying papers. That was the sound of papers being underlying. Tech leaders hoping AI might help save money and improve efficiency in IT infrastructure should know that only about 28% of use cases fully succeed and offer return on investment. That's the latest of these reports, this time from Gartner. One in five AI projects in IT infrastructure and operations fail outright. In a survey of 782 I&O managers conducted late last year, 57% have suffered at least one failure in applying AI to their area. Maybe a dry cloth would help. The research director at Gartner said many AI initiatives flopped because of unrealistic expectations. Quote, they assumed AI would immediately automate complex tasks, cut costs, or fix long-standing operational issues. When expectations are not realistically set and results don't appear quickly, confidence drops and projects stall. Unquote. Among infrastructure and operations leaders who faced setbacks with AI, 38% said persistent skill gaps continue to hamper the success. The same proportion cited poor data quality or limited data availability as a direct cause of AI project failure.
More data! More data! We need more data! Come on, Dr. Cup! More data! More data, huh? Get some data for me! More data! More data! More data! We need more! More!
These findings come against a backdrop of companies struggling to justify AI spending. In February, a survey of almost 6,000 corporate executives across U.S., U.K., Germany, and Australia found more 80% detect no discernible impact from AI on either employment or productivity, even though 69% of businesses currently use some form of AI. Another study from the Harris Poll found tech leaders would come under pressure to show returns on AI investment this year. 71% of the chief investment officers surveyed believed their AI budget would likely face cuts or a freeze if targets were not met by the end of the first half of the year. Hurry up. Japan's Minister for Digital Transformation, Hisashi Matsumoto, to you, has declared the nation will become the easiest place in the world to develop AI apps thanks to legal changes that mean organizations won't need to get consent to use some personal information. This again from the Register. To make that happen, Japan's government this week approved amendments to the nation's Personal Information Protection Act. Those amendments remove the requirement for opt-in consent before sharing personal data. Oh, the changes only apply to data that poses little risk of infringing individuals' rights and when developers use it to compile statistics for research purposes. Even health-related data comes under the amendments if it can improve public health. Facial scans are also fair game. The amendments require those who acquire facial images to explain how they handle the data, but offering a chance to opt out won't be mandatory. In the event of a data leak, organizations will not need to notify impacted citizens if there is little risk of harm to individuals. And who will be judging that? And a long article published this week in The New Yorker, that's a magazine, looks at allegations that Sam Altman, head of OpenAI, has trouble with the truth, telling different versions of it to different people. Ronan Farrow, one of the co-authors, and his partner spoke to a lot of people who know or have dealt with Altman, many of whom say they don't trust him. Quote, he's unconstrained by truth, says one former board member of OpenAI. He's accused of being desperate to please the people he's talking to while simultaneously having no issue with screwing people over. That's language from Petapixel. The magazine also reports he shows surprisingly little knowledge of the AI software his company builds. Futurism.com notes that he confuses basic AI terms, is inept at programming and machine learning. One former researcher at OpenAI says he sets up structures that on paper constrain him in the future, But then when the future comes and it comes time to be constrained, he does away with whatever the structure was. One senior executive at Microsoft went so far as to suggest that Altman could be eventually remembered as a Bernie Madoff-level scammer. At least it's a good scammer. News of AI. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. The Olympics ticket presale for locals in Southern California concluded middle of this past week. Some in Southern California left the first ticket drop empty-handed after seeing the high prices. Fans or potential ones reported sticker shock, big purchases, and broken hearts after logging on to secure a spot at the 2028 Games and finding prices as high as $5,500 plus a 24% service fee. That's a lot of service. Tickets for $28 for many events sold out fast, as did many for under $100, said one disappointed would-be ticket buyer. Here's the problem. This is a quote. The campaign made you feel like you had a shot at an insider deal because we're hosting the Olympics and this is our town. And I'm looking at tickets online for $400, $600, $2,100 a person. Unquote. The high prices, according to LAist, reflect a stark uptick in sports tickets across the board recently amid a hyper-focus on wealthier fans. An ever-increasing demand for live entertainment and dynamic pricing where sellers can adjust prices based on demand. In the case of the Olympics, the local organizing committee, LA 28, is counting on ticket and hospitality sales to bring in a whopping $2.5 billion to try to cover the cost of putting on the games. If they don't hit that mark, public funds could fill the hole. Says another possible Olympic ticket buyer, quote, it's completely unprecedented. I think they're pricing a whole lot of people out completely. LA 28 has not laid out how many tickets it released in its drop for locals or put out official prices. Angelinos who participated in the ticket drop told LAists they felt drawn in by the promise of $28 tickets, only to see astronomical prices on their screens. Many reported the cheapest tickets were almost entirely unavailable. By the beginning of this week, it was reported only $28 tickets left were for women's golf preliminaries and women's soccer matches held outside of Los Angeles. Yes, it's hosting the Olympics, but, you know, hosting doesn't happen to have to, you know, actually be there, does it? I don't think so. Not in the Olympics. It's a movement. And we pay for one. Every day. Now the apologies of the week. Predictions market platform Polymarket removed a market on its site that allowed users to bet on the condition of U.S. pilots following the attacks on U.S. fighter jets overseas in Iran. The market on the platforms, which has since been deleted, allowed users to wager on what day the pilots would be rescued. The existence of the market drew outrage from some lawmakers. One called it a dystopian death market. Polymarket responded by saying, "We took the market down immediately as it does not meet our integrity standards. It should not have been posted, and we're investigating how this slipped through our internal safeguards." Unquote. Polymarket users can make wagers on any topics, from the price of oil to how many times Elon Musk posts on X over the course of a week. CNN has apologized to Michael J. Fox after it shared a tribute to the star this week, prompting fears he had died, age 64. The news outlet published an article and video titled "Remembering the Life of Actor Michael J. Fox." Screenshots went viral. CNN later took the article down. Spokesperson told TMZ, quote, "The package was published in error. We have removed it from our platform and send our apologies to Michael J. Fox and his family. The apology came after Fox's own representatives debunked the report, saying Michael is doing great. In a thread post, Michael himself added, "How do you react when you turn on the TV and CNN is reporting your death? I think you turn the TV off." And BTS member, it's a Korean K-pop band member, Jungkook, has addressed his controversial explicit live stream a day before his group kicks off a highly anticipated world tour. He went live on the fan platform Wednesday, speaking publicly about the incident for the first time in over 2 months. "I personally don't really know if I did something seriously wrong," he said. "People on YouTube or streaming industry say these things all the time, but since I haven't shown this side of myself before, some fans may have felt uncomfortable. If any felt that way, I want to say I'm sorry. I'll try to be more careful." He said he was just in a really good mood. He appeared to have been drinking during a live stream at the end of February, and that's what he was apologizing for. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Finally, summer weather is arriving earlier, lasting longer and packing more heat than it used to, happening faster than scientists had previously measured. A new study about this by the researchers at the University of British Columbia, found that between 1990 and 2023, the average summer between the tropics and the polar circles grew about 6 days longer every decade. That's up from roughly 4 days per decade found in past research. For many cities, the numbers are striking. Sydney, Australia, has summer temperatures now lasting about 130 days, up from 80 days in 1990. Toronto summers are expanding by 8 days per decade. The study's findings have implications for agriculture, water supply, public health, and energy systems, many of which have been built around assumptions about when the warm season begins and ends. News of the warm. Ladies and gentlemen, this moment in the crypto winter, Bitcoin Depot, which operates one of the largest Bitcoin ATM networks, says attackers stole $3.665 million worth of Bitcoin from its crypto wallets after breaching its system last month. It really is a crypto winter. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh, WWNO, for helping with today's program. The email address and a whole lot of stuff to watch and listen to and read are at harryshearer.com. A whole other bunch of stuff, including some great performances by New Orleans piano players, is at my YouTube channel. And even more stuff you'll find at Substack, because that's where I'm writing. It's not an accident. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from London.